1, 2, 3, 4. Some might be offended that I'm sharing the secret. I'll make an exception because I think you'll keep it. What I'm telling you's true. Cross my heart, hope to die. What have you got to lose? Why would I lie?
Hello, and welcome to We Always Lie to Strangers, a podcast about Ozark's history, folklore, and beyond. My name is Sharp Woolston.
I'm Daniel Smiley.
And I'm Gus Carlson.
And I'm Raymond Mathis.
And we might always lie to strangers, but not on this show, because we're all friends here. Thank you for joining us. A small prelude before we get to today's yarn. I'm not sure exactly what it is about Newton County and Marion County, Arkansas. With a combined population of under 25,000 people, that draws so many cults to the area. We'll also put a little asterisk about the term cult. I'm using cult as a bit of a catch-all. In Marion County, we've got the home of the Covenant, the Sword, and the Arm of the Lord, who you might have been able to guess by the name were a paramilitary Christian nationalist groups with ties to the Aryan Nation and Elohim City, among other far white groups. And Marion County is also
home to... Did you just say far white?
I might have... accidentally said that. Same difference. Marion County is also home to the Nazariah Monastic Community, which is an African-American commune and, quote, esoteric spiritual center known by many locals as the Purple People, as members are required to wear purple clothing.
I've seen them.
And then Newton County is home to the Foundation of Ubiquity, which we will definitely do an episode on at some point, as well as a large number of followers of the Book of Durantia. Is that how I say it? Do you know, Gus?
I don't actually know how you pronounce it, no.
The Book of Tarantula?
That sounds... Urantia? I think that's correct, or somewhere
there's
close.
Not, Urantia, Urantia,
Myantia,
Urantia.
Aurantia.
But, you know, again, hard to do it. Now,
Aurantia
today
is
about...
than Urantia.
There we go.
Urinacea, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, what we're talking about today, you know, I probably shouldn't call a cult. And I'm not the one that called it a cult, but someone else did.
Baptist Church
Well, we're talking about the End Time Handmaidens.
Okay.
Now, I have been fascinated by the End Time Handmaidens going back to when I worked at a coffee shop in Harrison, Arkansas in 2007.
Common Grounds, R.I.P.
The coffee shop in Harrison.
Sorry.
Uncommon Grounds, yeah. And then this woman had come through the drive-thru, this older lady, and then, you know, got a coffee. And then my manager at the time, after she left, was like, what the hell is an end-time handmaiden? Because she had paid with an end-time handmaiden card.
Do they have, like, personalized visas? Like, can you get that at the bank?
I think it was a company card. That's what I'm saying here. There's so little about the End Time Handmaidens that at first I wasn't sure if this would even make an episode because pretty much everything I found out about them is either directly from sources of the End Time Handmaidens or ex-members of the church that call it a cult.
So you're saying we can't be fact-checked?
I'm just giving you what I found out.
See, I thought that this just means that I should be worried now.
No, but
how many people die in this story?
I don't remember, but I don't think it's a high number.
More than one is high.
Okay.
Honestly, most of the twists and turns are so not what you're expecting, and that's part of why it's fun. Now, because of the general lack of information, the flow of this episode might be a little different. There's two distinctive parts of this episode, so if the first part goes long,
the beginning and the end
become a two-parter. We'll see. Now, I will say that I'm going to go ahead and name my sources because I only have two. The first source is a documentary I watched released by the End Time Handmaidens called Unconditional Surrender, The Life Story of Sister Gwen Shaw. And the second part is from a website, which of course I don't have pulled up right now, that is called, I believe the website is ETHS-cult.com, which is a man's personal blog post that used to be in the organization.
He was an end-time handmaiden?
Well, the men are called servants.
Oh, I like it.
Do you think there's like a Ozarks like cult web ring, like in like the early 2000s, you know, like all their little cult sites have a nice little web ring together?
So part of the problem with researching this is there are a lot of sources of ex-members of the congregation that have negative things to say, but I would go to those websites and I would go, oh, this is going to give me a virus. I need to go.
Nice.
All right. Is everyone ready for part one? Unconditional surrender.
Let's do it live.
All right. So Gwen Bergman was born on October 1st, 1924 in Langham, Saskatchewan, a small farming community about 20 miles northwest of Saskatoon. She was born into a Mennonite family and had been baptized into the faith before she was even born.
How's that possible?
It's set up early.
I don't... Listen, I'm just telling you what the documentary told.
Listen, we believe in full immersion here, so, I mean, I'm just... What are they doing?
Doesn't the Mormon church have, like, the retroactive baptisms? Maybe someone has pre-baptisms.
Yeah, there we go. I forgot about... I almost chastised you for... confusing Mormons and Mennonites, but I get what you were saying. And yes, Mormons do that.
Do you think they just bless each other's nutsacks?
Who?
The Mormons. Like a pre-blessing.
You mean the Mennonites?
Yeah, that's actually...
The Mormons do the... Yeah.
It's where the men part comes in.
I guess I should mention real fast that unconditional surrender was in three parts. And part one was called From the Womb of the Morning.
After being baptized.
Well, she was baptized in the womb.
Still... Okay. It's hard for me to get past this. I just want to know, do they sprinkle the belly? Is there more to it? Like...
I mean, I think if you...
I need a religion scholar.
Holy water.
I want to do a quick Google.
Raymond, you're probably closest to being the...
I'm gonna do a quick Google of Mennonite... baptisms in utero. Carry on.
And then if you need to do it again, you can add in rural Canada.
Saskatoon. I'm not finding anything. For the Mennonite Church USA, they infants and children have no need for baptism since they are safe in the care of God. When they are...
Look,
I'm just saying.
This documentary was so boring. I did not watch it a second time. I was just scrambling notes as I went. And also, you might notice that she tells some tall tales. So, if you want to do a "this sounds like a lie" count, start the tab.
Okay. Dang.
This documentary was so disjointed. I did the best I could to put all of the information in a linear time, but also there's tons of talking heads from Gwen Shaw and random people that just come out of nowhere and have no relation to what is happening in the documentary. So I'm doing the best I can. Okay. Now, when she was 15 years old, her family moved to King City, Ontario, and which is around 10 miles north of downtown Toronto. One weekend, not long after the move, her parents went grocery shopping in the nearby town of Aurora when they came across a Pentecostal preacher ministering on the streets. The preacher's name was James Dean. Her parents liked his preaching and talked to him, and they were invited to his church, and they went there the next Sunday, where they then converted to Pentecostalism.
Oh, good.
It was for the fashion.
Yeah, how can you be a fascist without fashion?
You meet James Dean.
The James Dean,
fashion icon.
I mean, they had his motorcycle at the Hardee's in Harrison, so.
That's true. R.I.P.
What? How have I... That happened?
I went to the Beefaroo and the former Hardee's. The motorcycle is gone.
Damn it.
And no one knows where it is. In 1944, Gwen was attending the Eastern Pentecostal Bible College in Toronto when she received a vision from God of herself preaching before throngs of people in China in, and I quote here, what seemed to be the Chinese language. God God had told Gwyn to go to China to save everyone who would go to hell for not being Christians in
what,
China.
What year is this?
1944.
Okay, so China, which is still under Japanese occupation right now because it's World War fucking II. Great time.
We are in the midst of the Pacific Theater.
Great time. They really what they need in China right now.
I like the look on Gus's face of pure disgust of I am not touching this subject.
That was not my face. I was trying to think on like comparisons to Mormonism starts where they believe some very bizarre things about like indigenous people being Middle Eastern descent.
Oh, right.
So it feels like a lot of these kind of sort of beginnings always have this kind of sort of bizarre racial element sometimes.
Or yeah, like some kind of mysticism about like the Far East.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so she has received the vision from God to go to China. So she decided after receiving this vision that God was actually talking to someone else at the college and she was unintentionally also receiving the message.
Party line.
To which she said to God, if you want it to be me, you need to get me on my knees. At which point God threw her from her chair and she never doubted God again.
So I'm walking through the Garden of Eden. I see these low-hanging fruit and I'm just going to stroll on right by.
I did intentionally put in that quote.
to see if,
just because
if
of
Daniel
the,
would touch
the innuendo.
I appreciate it, but I'll wait my turn.
So Gwyn Shaw landed in China in December 1947.
Oh, yeah, conveniently after the war ends.
And ministered there for 23 years, which I want to point out real quick would be until 1970. Keep that in mind. She says how difficult life was for her living in China and Taiwan and how she ended up in Hong Kong where she stayed for about a decade and had three sons there between 1953 and 1959.
It's so difficult. Let me go to the one place controlled by English speakers.
At some point in the mid-60s, she ministered in the Philippines, including the fairly infamous New Bilibid prison in Mutunlupa. Can you try that one more time? Mutunlupa.
Okay, sure, that's perfect.
Which is, well, it's in the metro of Manila. That's right. where, quote, many hardened criminals serving life sentences were slain in the spirit and wept. So I just want to point out that she said that she was in China for 23 years, but then mentioned Taiwan, Hong Kong, and the Philippines.
I mean, I can be generous with Hong Kong and Taiwan, but the Philippines.
With Hong Kong and Taiwan, look, I don't want to get too deep into identity, but the Philippines, there's no argument you can make that that's China. In 1963, she met a man that she only referred to as, quote, an Indian brother.
Cool.
She noticed his passion, excitement, and a general pizzazz and asked what his secret was, and he said that he had fasted for 30 days leading up to his sermon. She decided to fast for 21 days. No reason that that exact number is given. I quote here that she only did it with her and her little Chinese servant knowing about the fasting.
That's a quote.
Yeah, that is why I made sure to say that this was a exact quote from Gwyn Shaw.
I feel like I could already feel like what her like Instagram captions would be for her wellness industry business.
Hashtag blessed.
At the end of 21 days, she knew it was the right thing to do because God said to her, get ready. Hong Kong is going to be too small for the ministry I'm going to give you. And then she doesn't actually go into any more detail about this other than saying that she spent some time in India and was quoted to say, quote, China was my first love. India was my great love.
So do we know if any of this is true?
Yes. So some of this now,
like, are there pictures or something?
Yes. There, and all it's right. Funny because a decent amount of the pictures you can't say for sure who's in them. It's old photographs, and it's funny that you say this because in the script,
National Geographic.
I've already talked about how there's talking heads that are coming up out of nowhere that don't really make sense with what's happening. There's so many parts that will cut to people singing her praises, clips from church services, which involve, you know, shots of music, shots of sermons, all sorts of stuff. And also, the End Time Handmaidens is an international organization that seems especially popular in Asia.
What?
Okay.
Like, she was in Asia for a long time, and I think because most of the people that they interviewed in the documentary, and I didn't really talk about it because it's just talking heads of people being like, and I found God through Gwen, you know, stuff like that. It's not interesting. But pretty much everyone that wasn't American were Asian people. Everyone that they interviewed that I remember was someone from, you know, various Asian countries. And again, and part of the problem is I'm basing this off of a documentary, which is the only time that I found anything where she goes on in depth into anything about her life.
Well, who better to shoot you straight?
So I'm just saying, like, this is, I'm just saying what she said. So part of the issue that I keep repeating is because of how disjointed this is. I don't know why this happened. And this isn't even crazy, but at some point in the 1960s, she was in the back of a car in Los Angeles.
Talking to God.
When God told her, quote, "You will be the first American woman to preach my word in Moscow." Does Russia say Moscow or Moscow? Moscow.
Isn't it Moscow?
And Moscow. One of them is how you say it, the city, the college town in Idaho, and the other one is how they say it in Russia.
Rather unfortunately, my education is also from the Ozarks, so I don't know.
Moscow?
Again.
Yeah. Let's go. It's fine.
Again. You said this. We're in the 70s now?
Yeah, the wall is up.
This is 1966.
1966. So she's still supposedly in China, but she's in L.A. But, like...
And she's in L.A. discussing going to Russia.
With God.
No, yeah. Okay. Even though Russia's been predominantly Christian since the Middle Ages and... Oh, yeah. No, we're going.
An American woman didn't preach
that. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I mean, does a Slovak count? No. They can't do it the same way.
So she made it to Moscow in 1966, where, quote, the communists didn't want her there because she was a woman, an American, and a Pentecost.
I mean, that part was probably true if she did make it there. Less so the woman
and
part.
The Pentecost part. The Pentecost part, I'm like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the woman part, they were probably more cool with that than when she went back to America.
She entered into Russia from India and then went to a Baptist church in Moscow.
What?
There was a Baptist church there. And she wasn't allowed to preach, but still enjoyed the moment. But then the preacher, now this is her story. The preacher asked her where she was from, and after talking... He decided that he would let her have the whole afternoon to preach. She became the first American woman to preach in Moscow.
And she spoke perfect Russian, right?
I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, like I said, this was one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. And I was doing all I could to pay attention. But I believe there was an interpreter that was just kind of like repeating it. But can you imagine listening to like 6 or 8 hours of a woman preaching in a language you don't know, and
yeah,
an interpreter
that
just
like a prank?
Can we go back to that pause?
No, I'm just saying if like you go to a church and then there's a woman from another country that does not speak your language, you don't know her language, and she is preaching and there's a guy interpreting her for 8 hours. That just seems so overwhelming.
Well, they're Pentecost.
I mean, they speak
so maybe
in tongues
they just,
here.
Speak yeah. in tongues.
That's what I was wondering. I was wondering if she said that she, like, preached in tongues.
I guess I didn't realize it, but at this point, we've hit part 3 of the documentary that I watched, Unconditional Surrender, and this is the one that especially was all over the place. Weird cuts, just a bunch of jumps. So, Gwen describes the formation of the End Time Handmaidens occurring in 1966 in Argentina. Again, I don't...
How is she making
look, I don't
money?
Understand. We'll get to that a little bit. When she called for 10,000 women to dedicate their lives to God, though God only confirmed with her about it in Chicago in 1970. This is all from the documentary. This is, I mean, anyway, now.
God leaves it left on red.
Yeah. We are now entering a section of This is where things go off the rails, and this is where all the fun stuff really starts happening. First, there's a clip of a sermon, and she mentioned that she had preached in Spain in 1973 and claimed the downfall of Franco's dictatorship was because God sent her there to preach.
All right, anti-fascist Hell yeah. God.
Put that on your resume.
In 1973, she got married to a man named Gwen Shaw.
Wait, what's her name?
Her name has been Gwen Bernard, or excuse me, Gwen.
Okay,
Bernard.
You said that she married a man named Gwen Shaw.
Jim Shaw.
Oh, Jim and Gwen?
I don't know if I misspoke or if that was just you hearing incorrectly, but in 1975, they moved to Ingolstadt, which means Angel Valley in German, which is a little compound in what's known as the Grand Canyon of Arkansas, several miles south of Jasper, Arkansas.
Woo!
Woo!
Shout out Cliff House Inn.
So I can't say this for certain, but it appears that in the documentary, there are shots of the Ingolstadt compound from the deck at the Cliff House.
Nice!
I have 90.
Looked at this cult commune many a time.
I'm 95% sure that that is where they're filming from.
Is that
place
still
open?
I haven't been there in years.
Hell yeah, it is.
Nice.
A lot of the documentary is testimonials of people who have been touched by Gwen Shaw. And there is an interview with a woman who had been... Oh, so I should point out that the documentary came out in the late 90s, I believe in 98 or 99, maybe even 2000. But there's an interview with a woman who had been at Ingolstadt for 21 years, since she was 13 years old after her mother died. And immediately after saying this, there is a super abrupt cut to a younger man talking in what appears to be the middle of an interview, where he says, "We were almost on the streets ourselves, and we heard about her, and we just went to Ingolstadt. I remember. I was there for the Great Fire."
I'm not sure if you watched a documentary or just like saw someone doing like a PowerPoint presentation of like a conspiracy board.
No, I believe you used to be able to buy this on their website.
Where did you see it?
Because at the YouTube,
yeah,
and at the end of each of the section, there's like this thing that comes up that's got their PO box and website and all that. So there's not really any details mentioned other than that story. This documentary ends as the Shaws show off the 13th house that they have bought, and it is located in Jerusalem, Israel.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Jerusalem, Arkansas.
Me too.
No, that it is in Israel. The documentary ends with them in Israel going, "Look at this 13th house that we have bought."
Nice.
So that's the end of part one. Here we get to the second part of this story, which, you know, it's a thing where I'm not saying it's a cult, but the accounts that I read were saying that it's a cult.
Hang on. Why do you not want to call it a cult?
Former member.
I don't think we can get in trouble for it, but, you know, play it safe.
Well, in its most technical of definitions, cult is a value neutral word.
Yeah, but it's not much of one anymore.
Oh, I know. It's a complete bullshit argument I'm making, but
I don't know. It's just kind of a thing where it seems like the safest way to go about things is to say, I'm not saying it's a cult, but I did get all my information from a website that is.
I'm not saying saying it's a cult. It just had a messianic figure leading it, to the detriment of members and their financial ruin.
So
I'm not saying it's a cult is a Joe Rogan thing.
I'm not saying it's a cult, but they did buy their 13th house in a foreign country.
I'm not saying it's a cult, but I like artisanal religion.
I have to mention. This is, okay, so this is in my...
Were they bigger than Tony Alamo? Or is that too River Valley for you?
One of the strangest things... No, that's on my list of potential subjects.
Oh, Alma is in the... Is Ozarks now?
North of I-40. It is to me. Yeah, so actually only part of Alma is in the Ozarks. I guess I don't know where he lived in Alma.
He lived...
So...
My biological father, who I don't think will ever listen to this, They had a house that would that like backed up onto the Alamo property. But, like, he moved there after that cult died. But, like, it's just there's a massive gate, you know. It's weird. Alma's a weird place.
Now, I have to mention that most of what the ex-members wrote about in their testimonies was that the End Time Handmaidens wasn't Christian enough, that it's too spiritual, and at other times complaining that the teachings are too Catholic or too Jewish, and how being so is blasphemous. Yes, somebody complained about the End Time Handmaidens coming off too much like Chabad Lubavitch, which, yes, is the Jewish sect that were digging the tunnels in New York.
Oh, cool.
Wow.
They are attached to this story, even if it's in a very small way. It's very funny. It's just crazy because when I was reading about it, I didn't know what that was. So I did some research into it. You know, and Raymond had just mentioned... What was the word you just said? I'm blanking now. Messianistic.
That was not a word that I just used, but okay.
Messianic.
Messianic.
I'm a messianist.
Chabad Lubavitch has their messiah figure.
But only for, like, the fringe, right? Only the tunnel. Like, not the mainstream part of that movement.
It's just wild because I read about
it. Okay, how do they?
And it was like I don't need to mention this in the story. And then the tunnel thing broke, and I was like, I cannot believe this attaches to the End Time Handmaiden script.
2024 has already revealed itself as the year of the tunnel. There was that guy that was told by God or whatever that he was digging a tunnel in Brazil in his house to find secret gold, and then he fell down it and died. There was the lady elsewhere that was like doing a live TikTok of her digging a tunnel under her house. So everyone's just digging tunnels.
It's all cold right now.
I get it. I dig a hole. It's fun.
Chabad's messiah person.
You,
I can't remember.
Are you
it was
saying this correctly?
I looked it up and it said...
The CH is like a...
It said that the C is silent. Chabad. Kay. Lubavitch. Kay. I could be
Listen,
wrong.
Listen, I'm not
going to
correct you on this one.
I obviously didn't read any of these, but Gwyn Shaw published, I want to say, like 75 books. And, you know, one of the primary complaints from ex-members are that a lot of what she wrote were stolen from other preachers, from other religions, from other figures, including the rabbi that is considered the messiah figure for Chabad. Or like
she could have been so much more productive if she was, like, in the ChatGPT era. She could have had
man.
These right out.
It's wild.
Good point.
So,
yeah, cult literature is going to get even shittier too.
Well, and the reason that I feel like calling it a cult is valid is because all of the descriptions of former members are standard fare cult activity, such as keeping people tired, keeping people hungry. The End Time Handmaidens have a yearly convention.
That's just a job.
And there would be multiple meetings during a day. But it would start at 7 in the morning and go late into the night. And it wasn't uncommon for all of the meetings to just be one big thing and go for 20 hours straight of just sermons and singing and dancing and shouting and all sorts of getting on. And to become a full member of the End Time Handmaidens and Servants, which are what the men were called after they started admitting men, you had to fast for 21 days. To become a member.
Jesus.
Like when Shaw had done. And then during these meetings at the convention, Gwyn Shaw would often say that the feeling of tiredness was a representation and indication of spiritual weakness. The long hours with exhausting and physical schedules was also maintained at the headquarters of Ingletal. And, you know, when you've got people living at one area and then you're forcing them to be active for 20 hours a day, it's easy to maintain, you know, people in your orbit. So the primary target of the group was divorced women or women unhappy in their marriages. Part of the message was of Gwyn Shaw was to encourage anyone, but especially women, to do what they believe God wanted them to do, regardless of marital or family obligations, which led to a high amount of women either straight from divorce or divorcing once they joined the End Time Handmaidens, or otherwise just abandoning their families to join.
Okay, here's the thing. When do they start calling themselves the End Time Handmaidens? We haven't gotten that.
That was, I probably just wasn't clear enough about it. That was the early 70s when she made a push, but I don't think it really became a set thing until they had their compound in 1975.
Okay, so
when does their actual, like, theological beliefs start to develop? Because I'm not entirely clear on
we're still, like, Pentecostal I believe at this point.
We're Pentecostal, but then she's publishing all of these books and beliefs. And again, I'm not reading all the books, but I think it's a thing where she's just kind of,
yeah, it sounds like we've gone from we have two sources to we have 77 sources.
Oh, no, I did not read any of the books. Yeah. I did not read one of them. But, you know, part of her preaching about, you know, abandoning your family if it makes you unhappy is because when she had left Hong Kong to go to the Philippines and India, she had left her sons with a caretaker and went on the road to preach without them for a while.
Cool. It's a good mom.
So this next part is from the ETHS cult blog post that is on multiple websites, but it's a man who lived and worked at Ingletal for 4 years as a staff member.
And why did they name it a random German thing? Fucking weird.
It beats me. I mean, there's so much stuff where they're like, oh, yeah, of course we called it Ingletal Valley of the Angels. And then they
a lot of these things are going to be compromises in a, you know, a meeting room. Like, there was one guy that was really stoked about it, you know, or stoked.
Well, and her family, I was going to say her family was German, but her family were Swedish.
Yeah. Okay.
Hang on. There are kids at my house. Just a second.
Okay. So
I'm so sorry.
If you guys, real quick, while Sharp's gone, get on the old Google map and just search Cliff House Inn.
Yeah,
The End Times Handmaidens and Servants, like, ranch comes up. It's probably, like, I don't know, a quarter mile away.
So that is, so you can see it.
So in other words, I've seen this and I just didn't realize what I was seeing.
Yeah.
I think that's true of all of us now.
They have a lot of houses. Oh, nice. One of their buildings says 69 on it.
Nice.
Their corporate office. It's got 10 reviews. Jesky. Great group of missionaries, revivalists, intercessors, evangelists, and more. Totally focused upon God's specific leading according to his perfect will.
They have 4.8 stars. Oh, wait, that's the Cliff House, not the End Times. No, it is. No, it is. The End Times Handmaidens has 4.8 stars.
Someone rated food is awesome, but service could be better. So I think someone got a little.
Cliff House or End Time Handmaidens?
No, here it is. Great group of missionary, revivalist, intercessors, evangelists, and more. Totally focused upon God's specific leading according to his perfect will.
Look, we've read all the Mr. Barn entries. I think we should read the cult's Google
reviews,
too.
Right now.
The most amazing conference I've ever attended. Nice people.
That's a 4 out of 5 stars, though. The nice people.
That's true.
Also, they're spelled servants wrong. Right? Or can I not spell servant? How do you spell servant?
I don't know.
Without looking sharp.
S-E-R-V-A-N-T-S?
Okay, this is with E-N-T-S. So why is it End Time Handmaidens and Servants?
I mean, their LLC is servant spelled correctly.
Okay, so someone just couldn't put it on Google Maps. At some point, their world convention was on God TV. I can't find a year on that.
It's included on the cell phone plan to God. You know, it's one of those streaming channels.
I found a forum where this guy that I'm reading his account had posted a link to it on a cult forum website, and one of the people responded and was like, "I'm a preacher in Jasper, and I just think they're the sweetest people, and I don't think it's a cult at all."
Well, so Newton County does have kind of interesting relationships with the cultists, because I've known a few, I've interacted with them. Not End Time Handmaidens, but everyone's just kind of like, eh, they have their thing. They believe Jesus is an alien, you know, like, just move on about your day.
All right, so we have the man that worked at Ingletal, as a staff member for 4 years, and he had initially just gone for a couple of weeks after whatever their big gathering is. So he had been asked to stay longer after working a couple of weeks. And now this, and was told that they, the people there, had been praying for him to stay. And a common occurrence was for Gwen Shaw, when people were considering leaving or opposed her and what she wanted to do, she said that they would be met with judgment from God, and anyone that who left would be in a great spiritual darkness and spiritual danger if their leaving was not actually the will of God. And then she would have visions that people that had left had died, though no one that left ever died mysteriously, you know.
And what she didn't tell them is that they all died very peacefully in their sleep, like an old age. It was just, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, I'm becoming a lot more comfortable calling this a cult.
The work week was 6 to 7 days a week, from morning to midnight, all while the staff was being told by Gwen Shaw if they should be fasting or not, and she probed into all aspects of personal lives, including sex life.
Nice.
And staff were required to tell members of authority, that's the quote there, members of authority, if they wished to leave the boundaries of the compound, and telephone calls were regularly monitored. So the books, now I already mentioned that. I was funny whenever you've got the stuff of like, this woman made us work like 60 hours a week and didn't feed us and made us fast and like kept us tired and gave us no privacy. But everyone was so fixated on it not being Christian enough. And in her books, they complained about plagiarization and like, I mean, straight direct copies from certain texts, but she plagiarized from Hindu, Mormonism, various New Age writers and beliefs, the Masonic figure from Chabad, and then I said Masonic,
Messianic.
But I meant Messiah. Messianic.
He could have been a Freemason.
You never know.
Messy antics.
But then I do have, so I didn't read any of her books, but in this guy's post, he highlighted some quotes from some of her books that were unchristian, and I like some of them, so I'm going to read you some quotes from her books. Are you ready? Here's one. Quote, God is not only male. He is female. One of his names is El Shaddai, which means mother god. The gods crested Adam, and he made him like himself, creating him the male and female characteristics.
Okay.
Here's another quote. If God created male and female, it was because bisexuality somehow belongs to his own nature.
Nice.
Sure.
Are we sure that she means that in the way that we mean bisexual in 2024?
I don't
probably
know.
Not, but you know.
Does she literally mean God has aspects of two sexes?
I don't
feel
know.
Like it's more likely that than the cooler interpretation.
I wonder if she picked that up in the Philippines, because isn't there a thing where in the Philippines like they have a third gender? That's not specifically male or female. Have you heard of this?
I don't know if it's the Philippines or not. But yes.
I think it is. Anyways.
And then here's a third quote that is a little more out there. Quote, blood is congealed light. It is light that has become solidified. In the body of man there are veins, and these veins are flowing with a red substance, which is none other than light. Light that has mystically become congealed.
Okay, so, but only in humans.
It's kind of it's a gross word. Your light's become congealed.
I feel like you could hear someone say that verbatim at like an old Wakarusa or something.
Yeah. And anyway, so that's most of the description of the guy being in a cult. Again, there was such a focus. Instead of going into more detail about being treated poorly, he was just like, I don't know if she's Christian enough. But Gwen Shaw died at Ingletal on January 13th, 2013. On the group's website, globaloutpouring.org, which seems to be a rebrand, it shows that the new leader is just the woman who joined when she was 13 and had been interviewed in the documentary. The website has all of Gwen Shaw's books for sale, which were printed on-site at Ingletal. And also the website has blog updates from the House of Peace, which is the organization's home in Jerusalem, Israel, which, yes, is giving updates about the current conflict, which I chose not to quote anything.
Good call.
Yeah. But I just, so I know that.
I need to get those
off the
record.
At parts of this, it was boring. What
their takes. What do oh, a bunch yeah, of it's... Christian Zionist cult members think of this? And who the fuck hangs out with them?
They don't like Palestinians very much.
Shocker. The Cliff House Inn opened in 1967, so that was definitely their closest phone/restaurant, and I bet those people were super annoyed with the End Times Handmaidens.
But maybe they were just sweethearts, you know, the ones that got permission to leave to have some chicken fried steak.
Yeah.
And some pie.
Make a phone call.
And make a phone call.
Anyway, I know that at times that was a little boring, but considering none of you knew anything about the End Time Handmaidens, I thought it was pretty interesting.
Absolutely.
Well, part of the reason that I didn't want to call it a cult is it's active.
Yeah.
Like it is ongoing, and also it seems like they've really obviously there's no accounts after Gwyn Shaw died, and there's a really good chance that after she died
they became normal.
They became, I mean,
just a church.
They're Pentecostal.
Yeah, but like I don't call. You know? I mean, Pentecostals have some things, but like. They're not asked permission to leave the
I
don't, church.
Dude,
I think they might be.
I grew up Assemblies of God, and it was a nightmare.
I mean, I think the difference between like a cult and a religion is really just a matter of scale. You know, like
I
say that sounding like a Reddit atheist of the highest order, but I don't. You know.
Anyway, thanks everyone for joining us.
Well, when did they end up in the Ozarks? Like, when did they move here?
1975.
75. Okay. So that's like right in the tail end of the Back to Lander movement, and it kind of that actually would dovetail with a lot of divorces of Back to Lander couples of. Situations like that.
It does make sense because they just said that they decided to buy land in Arkansas, mm-hmm. and it would make sense if someone knew about the Back to Lander movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, like, it's like because I think my parents moved here at Back to Lander somewhere like 75, 74, and
same,
I think
same
they were
general.
Kind of, yeah, I think they were still kind of on the tail end, if I remember right.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. This has been We Always Lie to Strangers. We'll catch you next time. Hey, it's Sharp. We just wanted to reiterate, we aren't calling the Handmaidens a cult. They have seemed to have rebranded after the death of Gwyn Shaw, and it seems a little close to defamation to go after a group based on the testimony of one man. After recording the episode, we found out that Raymond's mother was actually invited to join the End Time Handmaidens after her divorce in the 90s. She didn't think that they were part of a cult, but she didn't join. The website by the man calling the Handmaidens a cult is ethscult.com. You can read more there if you want. There are 42 Gwyn Shaw books rated on Goodreads. Did a bad job of getting this point across in the main script, but a decent chunk of the money for the End Time Handmaidens was from her books that are still printed on site at Ingletall to this day. We Always Lie to Strangers, the podcast here, supports a ceasefire in Gaza. Thank you for listening.